Agenda is a subdivision and rezoning of the land located at the northwest corner of Hugo Street South and the public lane behind Berwick Place under file DASZ 7 of 2014.
Could we have an overview of the issue from the staff first before we start?
Absolutely. So we're going to first take a quick overview of the proposal by the staff. Go ahead.
Andrew, you want to take that?
Sure. So this is an application for subdivision rezoning for the area that you just mentioned. Basically, the development follows principles of transit-oriented development, which we support in this area, which is directly adjacent to the Fort Rouge Station. And it meets policies in the Complete Communities Direction Strategy. And we work collaboratively with the developer and the consultant on this. And we're recommending approval. There's a couple of conditions, a few conditions. A couple key ones would be we're recommending plan approval. Then that plan approval be submitted to a community committee, planning, property, and development, and Winnipeg Fire and Paramedic Service. The development be limited to a maximum of 250 dwelling units. And I think those are the two key recommendations of the ones.
And you've already reviewed the master plan earlier this evening, and everything in the rezoning application is consistent and complies with that master plan.
All right. Seeing that? Good. Okay. Well, this first call up. Those in support, is there somebody here in support that is the main person in support that should speak first? The applicant? So, David, you're going to speak first?
And
David Hill?
Sure.
Go together? Okay. Yeah, we're going to give, just to keep it fair all around the table, we'll give each presenter 10 minutes?
Yeah.
10 minutes. So, try to keep it within 10 minutes.
We'll be short.
Okay. Sure.
My name is David Hill. I'm here with Streetside with my co-worker, Brian Cornelson. And we're pretty excited about this plan. Just wanted to really thank the thank you for reviewing. I know there's a lot of work went into the report and all the city departments that were involved with that. We appreciate the time it took. And we're looking forward to getting to work on this project. David has been our professional consultant steering the approval process, the changes to the plan development overlay and various things. And I think we'll let David do most of the talking tonight because he knows the intricacies of the area master plan and so on.
And thank you, Councillor, staff, and members of the public. Just for the record, David Marsh, Dillon Consulting, 1558 Wilson Place. I believe you need that for the record. Just to give a brief overview of the rezoning and subdivision and plan development overlay, as was covered in the area master plan amendment, and we can pull up some of that information if members of the public wish. The site in question is located immediately next to the Fort Rouge Station, which is right here. The roadway is the Morley Avenue extension. It actually is not a public right-of-way. It's actually considered part of the transitway, and then comes into this circulation area, commonly referred to as a paperclip, because when you look at our airfoil, that is exactly what it looks like. So the two sites in question really are this parcel here, which is proposed for a multifamily four-story building of approximately 130 units, and then to the south, this longer odd-shaped parcel, commonly known as the hockey stick, is essentially looking at 50 townhouses in a cluster format, five clusters of 10 townhouses each. And this land is being purchased from the city of Winnipeg via the real estate division. The proposal is essentially to extend the existing area master plan and a PDO and zoning from the Fort Rouge Yards project onto this site. This site is part of the Fort Rouge Yards major redevelopment site, is designated in Complete Communities, and it does make sense to have this all considered together to be an integral developed to flow through. And ideally, one of the things that's prominent is that there is a pedestrian connection that leads from the Gemlands further to the south through this portion of the development and up to the station. So essentially the rezoning and plan of subdivision before you is to implement that area master plan amendment and to implement the larger vision of Fort Rouge Yards and transit-oriented development and the requirements that the city had as part of the sales process for this land. The land is currently zoned M2 and R2. The portion that's R2 is essentially over in this area. And what is being proposed, the rezoning and plan of subdivision, is that Lot 2, which is this piece in here, will remain with the city. That is condition of the sales agreement. And then there are two essentially parcels that are created. Lot 1, which is to the south, which is the townhouse portion, being rezoned to RMFM with a PDO. And the Lot 3, which is where the apartments or the multifamily mid-rise building, being RMU PDO 1. And that PDO, the plan development overlay, is essentially many of the same provisions or most of the same provisions that's found in the current Fort Rouge Yards development. The PDO, again, implements the overall area master plan and the area master plan amendment that we've introduced to bring this land into the Fort Rouge Yards, and essentially creates two new areas, a 4A and a 4B under that PDO. In a long story short, what the provisions of the PDO involves is prohibiting single-family residential and duplex. The intent is we need to have a minimum density to support the rapid transit corridor, reduce the parking requirements consistent with TOD principles and best practices, and doing it a parking on an area basis as opposed to an individual building-by-building basis, and having a parking maximum of 1.5 parking spaces per unit. Through the PDO is to permit lane-loaded parking for the townhouses on parcel 1, also shown as area 4A under the PDO here, so that parking can occur off of this lane. This is a common occurrence that we see throughout the more mature parts of the city of Winnipeg, and in our dialogue with the public service, they've indicated that that is something they're going to be changing in the zoning bylaw for the city as a whole, so we've essentially helped to enable that through the PDO here. There is some minor changes in setbacks, a reduced front yard of 10 feet, which is along Hugo Avenue, which is technically the front yard. However, there is also a building height and building envelope provision that you go up 20 feet and then you go at a 45-degree angle. That's to keep large masses of building away from the street and maintain solar access and avoid shading of adjacent properties. There's also reduced side yards facing the Morley Avenue extension, and that same 20-foot up 45-degree plane also applies from the south side of parcel 4A to keep those buildings at an appropriate scale and density to the townhouses that exist further to the south. The PDO does permit very limited mixed use on the ground floor, predominantly of the RMU, the 4B parcel shown here, and it's really aimed at live workspaces and two of the units on the extreme western portion of that apartment building are designated to permit ground floor retail of a very limited nature if the market will bear it. It's highly questionable whether commercial is viable here, but we felt it's important to put the enabling framework in place that if the land values and the market changes, that the building can adapt. Realistically, the vast majority of commercial needs for area residents and the residents of Fort Rouge Yards will be either met further east at the Osborne South Biz area. It's very vibrant. And also in this case, they can simply hop on the rapid transit corridor, go up one stop to Osborne Station, and they have ready access to both Cord and Osborne. The townhouse development in the Hockey Puck parcel, as is often known, is essentially consists of 50 ground-oriented townhouse units. That clustered townhouse concept, as we said, this is a rendering of what Streetside believes that is going to look at this stage. Essentially, each townhouse is a ground-oriented, has its own access point, and that they're clustered to try to maximize density and also keep these as a relatively smaller units to keep affordability. They're all also designed for the corner units to have a flex space in the basement area, which could potentially be developed as a mortgage helper or a the correct phrase is not secondary suite, but it's an additional principal dwelling, I believe, is how zoning and permit says we should handle this. Essentially, it's a flex space that if someone wants to take their bonus room in the basement, convert it to a small apartment that, you know, a university student can use, or their aunt or their grandma, they can do that. There is a limited amount of units that is going to be made available. We're looking at approximately 66 parking spaces, including designated visitor parking, loading areas, and universally accessible parking spaces. We are very cognizant, as we explained as part of the area master plan amendment process, we're very aware of the neighborhood concerns with traffic. We're very aware with the neighborhood concerns about on-street parking. And so that we're very cognizant from day one to make sure that A, we're minimizing transportation impacts, B, that we are providing adequate parking for the site. In addition, the Public Works Department...
2 minute warning.
Okay. In addition, the Public Works has asked for a snow storage easement area, and we're widening the rear lane out to 7.25 meters wide right-of-way. And also, there is a 3.5 meter wide enhanced pedestrian linkage here from GEM up to the station. The multifamily is relatively more straightforward. It is an L-shaped parcel to bring the buildings up to the street, parking behind. It does have provisions for that limited ground floor commercial here at this location closest to the station, and sidewalk improvements to Hugo and direct linkage to the rapid transit station. These are some schematics of what this development may look like. They're still dealing with the design issue at this time. They are providing 171 parking spaces for 130 units, the vast majority with 93 are underground. We are in full concurrence with the staff report. We thank the Public Service for their efforts in working with us. We are fine with the minor additions that they've indicated for conditions. The only request we would have, it deals with Part C development agreement conditions, condition 5 in the ACG report, that is shown here. It's basically saying that along that Morley Avenue extension, which is controlled by transit, that the developer is responsible for putting in a sidewalk and putting in boulevard sod and trees on both the south and north side. We are more than happy to do this, but this is a benefit to both the city transit system and these sites, and those lands are controlled by transit. We can't do those improvements without transit's permission. So we're proposing that the condition be amended that also require the approval of the director of Winnipeg Transit under here, and that the developer is responsible for 50% of those costs, not the 100% as made. Those are the only concerns and issues that we have. We've had an opportunity to work with staff to resolve the other issues, which will be handled through site plan approval or amended conditions. And with that, we're open to any questions you might have.
Any questions at this point?
Well, I think I'll wait and hear the rest of the what concerns come up from anybody. Mm-hmm. And I've got the report. So.
Can you speak up, please?
Oh, sorry. I'll wait. I'll await other speakers and raise my questions up
right. So we'll
later
close.
On. Thank you.
So we'll welcome you back after the other people have a chance to present. Now I'm going to list off some names. Support. This is your opportunity to speak. We are supposed to provide you the opportunity to speak. You don't have to, but if you wish to, this is your chance. Okay. So I will, Brian Cornelson, would you like to speak?
No, I think David told
okay.
that.
Okay. Sounds good. How was that? And anybody else? Let me just look through my little list here. That's about it. That side. Okay. Anybody else that wishes to speak in support of the application who has not filled in a form? Anyone out here? See none? Going once, going twice, gone for now. I'll move into those in opposition. Now, again, if there is somebody in particular that I'd like to lead off, I have no problem with that. Otherwise, I'll just call the names out at random. Random it is. Ed Bordeaux, would you like to come and speak? Come on.
Boudreaux,
thank you.
I have a written.
Yeah, page. He'll grab it for you, our trustee clerk.
How many copies?
There's three or four.
I have six or seven, so.
Very good.
I didn't know how many you'd need. Four, then? No.
One more.
Yeah.
you. So, Edith, welcome in.
Thank you.
Just if you just have a seat, get so comfy.
Okay.
Give us your name, full name, and address, and tell us what your comments are.
My name is Edward Boudreau, and I will have some general comments and then specific comments. The map that I gave you shows you where there's an X on Carla is where I live at 593 Carla, so you know where I am in the neighborhood. I've lived at that location for 15 years, and previously I lived at 425 Arnold for 13 years after 1966. So I moved away to Kingston Crescent and then came back and liked the neighborhood, and I built a new house on land that I purchased from CNR. And so the land I purchased was 300 feet, and I subdivided it into six properties, so I am a developer. That's supposed to be a joke. So, you know, I have a little bit of experience, but I want to know that I did not ask for any variations to build the houses that are there. I sold the lots, and people built them themselves. And if you go by that way, you'll see that we have a family of houses that I think have improved the neighborhood. When I bought the parcel from CNR, they were paying $4,000 in taxes, and now the taxes are over $28,000. So I think I've made a little contribution to the city's deficit problem. During the time recently, in the last 10 years, I've experienced massive construction in the area. If you look at where my house is, I have not put in, but there have been a number of projects. One, there was the sewer, which was long, built under there, and then there was the rapid transit. And then lately, there's the massive garage for the new transit that's 16 feet from the lane. So I know a lot about construction and construction noises, and I pity the people who are live to the south of me because I know what they've gone through. I want to make some general comments, and I'll make specific comments. I think what we need is a neighborhood plan, and we need a traffic plan. Now, I know there was a problem with the Cordon Avenue plan, that it got sabotaged by different parties, but I did attend the first meeting, and I thought it was productive, and I think that I would like to encourage you to make neighborhood plans, because otherwise you're making ad hoc decisions on parts and questions and so on without a master plan. In particular, I would like to see a traffic study done by the city traffic department and not by a consultant. For 15 years, I worked for a consulting firm, and the one rule I learned is you never produce a report which the people who pay for the report don't want. So I have very strong suspicions about a project that's been paid for by the developer. They will give him the answer he wants, or they'll never get any more business from him. So a consultant's a guy who borrows your watch and then tells you the time. So that's my view of consultants. I wanted to see the city's traffic department do proper plans. Now, why is it important in this area? This is an old area. Our streets are 21 feet wide in most of the location, and particularly in the wintertime when you allow parking, traffic going back and forth is somewhat dangerous. So that the traffic consultant needs to drive these streets in the wintertime, which they seem to not do. They just look in their books to figure out some numbers. So my main recommendation is that we should have proper planning, both on the neighborhood plan for development as well as for traffic studies. At the moment, we're jamming in 1,125 units in the two developments, the Jim development, Mike Holmes development, Fort Rouge Yard, whatever the flavor of the day of that one is, and the current project that you're looking at. So you've got a large influx of people into an old neighborhood, and I think that would be fine if we did the plan first and then that followed from the plan, not do these things so that we can't have a plan afterwards. Now, and my basic recommendation is, why not hold off this development? This land has been here for a long time. Go ahead, do the proper planning, and then have your hearings and so on. I have an expression for Winnipeg. It's PHMNP, and it stands for potholes, mosquitoes, and no planning. And I think we have that too much of the time. Now, specifically, my specific objection is, if you look at my map that I gave you, is what is going to happen to traffic if the lane that is behind Berwick Place is allowed for massive traffic to go down. Because when traffic is bad on Jubilee and Osborne, people choose to cut through our neighborhood to jump the queue. And nowhere could I have planned it. The massive disruption that happened on Osborne today showed traffic just scrambling through the whole neighborhood. Well, they do that every day. If you want, you can come for coffee, sit on my deck, and count the number of cars that go down in the morning. And if you make it easy for them to go down what is now a 16-foot lane, if you turn that into a street, you're having lots of problems. Lanes are simply not streets. People on that street, often when they park to get in their garage, they don't have automatic garage openers. They have manual door openers. So you have to stop the car, go in, open the door, get back in your car, and drive. And if we have a massive amount of traffic coming down that street, we're going to have a lot of honking horns. Secondly, it's not fair to those people who back onto that lane that they can expect to have the large amount of traffic that's going to come in that direction. So what I tried to show you on my map here is how I've got a guy I call Leadfoot Harry who wants to make it in a hurry. This is the route that he would take from Jubilee. He comes to Jubilee, see it's all backed up, so he's going east. So at Argue, since the traffic is backed up going the other way, people let him make a nice left turn. He goes down Argue, follows Argue along over the lane that follows over to the Gem development, and where I've got the 16-foot lane and I've done the hash marks, is my understanding the developer wants to make that a street rather than a lane. And if that happens, people will go down Hugo. They'll take another lane that goes down Hetherington Park, and then they'll turn left, come down my street, which is Carla, take a left street at the next one, Nassau, take a right, and now they're on a street that has a light. So having the light, they can go up there, wait six or seven cars, and they've jumped this big queue that goes all the way down these two major streets. And I am confident this will happen on a large scale. So my idea is that you not allow particularly that lane to be that street, that lane to become a street, that traffic should happen on the property of this development. These guys are paid big bucks, so they should be able to figure it out, where they don't have to dump on their neighbor lane. I guess that's my presentation.
Other Jabatsky, any questions?
No, thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you very much. Bev Pike?
Thank you for allowing me to address you. But first, I'd like to know to whom I have the honor of speaking. I don't know who
Municipal
you are.
Administration? By all means.
So I'm Kim Rabin. I'm the city's land development administrator.
Okay.
Don Franchek. I'm with the fire prevention plan examiner.
Well, can you spell your last name?
F-R-A-N-C-H-U-K.
Thank you.
I'm Andrew Ross. I'm a planner at the city.
Curtis Kowalki, planner with the Urban Planning Division.
Thank you. That helps.
Good.
Okay, I'm going to pass you. Sorry, I'm blowing somebody else's glasses. We have a brief. I'm representing the South Osborne Residence Group. And I'm going to whip through this at the speed of light. Yeah?
10 minutes, yeah.
That suits you?
Perfect.
Bev, do you have a list of who's in the group, or is it?
Yes. You'd like a board list?
Sure. I think it should be part of the...
Okay.
Yeah, but...
I'll tell the board. Two of our board members are here, and another member, founding member of the Winnipeg Neighborhoods Coalition is here, McDonald. If you're worried that I wrote this myself, I didn't. Just for the record. All right, title, Condo Damage to Lord Roberts and South Osborne, cause, another developer, and you see there's citations at the bottom. We've got quite a few in the area. Is proposing to build in tiny Lord Roberts without any study of current neighborhood needs, any respectful or meaningful public consultations in place, any neighborhood plans, or creating its own roads, preserving enough green space for decent quality of life, or any accurate studies of rapid transit or population growth. The symptoms that result from these causes are loss of about 22 acres. Nobody at the city can tell us exactly how much we've lost. 22 acres green space, 250 trees, peace and quiet and pleasant views. We've had drilling and flooding of residents' yards last year, as well as McKittrick Park without notice. We still have dangerous holes left unguarded near children and homes. We have heavy, polluting, noisy vehicles moving past the school and the play areas at all hours. We have traffic studies based on speculation and compromised by developers' funding. And in this case, it seems like compromised by the developer also doing the traffic study. Unclear. My point is it's unclear who's actually doing all this. It's suspicious. Wide foundation cracks in houses near construction sites. Transit buses now revving engines and driving over the speed limit as early as 3:30 in the morning. So I'm talking about unregulated transit noise. Transit workers now parking hundreds more cars on local streets. We've got an estimate of 400 to 500. That's since the transit expansion. Fears about overpopulating this tiny cul-de-sac, overuse of narrow back lanes, and fears about decades of construction to come. So the footnotes at the bottom indicate what we've faced and what we face in our tiny neighborhood. That's why the residents group exists. South Osborne Residents Group's mandate is to advocate on behalf of the neighborhood. Problem summary. Residents keep telling us that they believe council cares little for Lord Roberts and more for richer neighborhoods. Lots of evidence of that. People tell us they feel council has broken trust by supporting developers instead of voters. They see that council supports the lack of local, current, or even accurate evidence.
Sorry, who are they?
The residents. So, problem summary, residents keep telling us that. So this is what they've told us in the past 4 years. You don't...
Well, again... Who are they? Do you have a list of memberships?
Have a formal membership. We had an AGM. We're entitled to represent what residents tell us.
I was asking who they were.
Yes.
So you're saying this is your members have told you who they are.
Yes, residents are. If you'd like us to provide evidence, we're certainly happy to do that.
No, I just asked you a question.
We just asked for respect. So I'll go on. They do not like council turning our century-old roads into condo thoroughfares. Residents don't want any more traffic or sewage. Residents want much more green space, and they hate losing trees, parks, and sports fields. Residents would like to see sensitive, green, and energy-efficient building. Developer open houses do not substitute for good planning. Public meetings such as this one are not the way to address residents' needs. Future condo residents will be the only ones without traffic issues because they'll be living on a dead end. Our century-old underground infrastructure requires much more careful analysis and planning than we've seen. Residents might support small developments if plans were in place to protect the area. Residents wish the city would let residents get away with what it lets developers do. That we hear more than anything. So they tell us things like, I wish I could build up without a permit. I wish I could take over the park. I wish I could, do what I want with the land next to me. Current problems lead to long-term problems. Residents predict that this mature character area can become a rapid transit ghetto. That includes unsellable condos requiring more city subsidies, lack of throughways for emergency traffic, light, air, water, and sound pollution, increased rental and rooming house properties, unstable population due to lack of peace, sewage backups due to condo overflow and inadequate land drainage. Are you with me so far?
Keep going. Yeah, 4 minutes.
Solutions, yes, I'm at the end. Solutions, we like to not just be grousy, we like to provide helpful hints. Number one, show you care about current residents more than about future ones. City councils that do this are more successful in building strong and creative communities, and there's four examples here, there's many more. Example, Happy City St. John's, Newfoundland, Federation of Calgary Community, City of Saskatoon Neighborhood Planning. All those integrate with respect residents' concerns. Number two, take the high road. Engage Lord Roberts in discussions about its future before approving more construction. Host a meaningful facilitated workshop so residents can have a proper forum for consulting with you. For example, the Lord Roberts priority setting public workshop that Jenny hosted recently. Number three, study Lord Roberts' needs. That's the biggest problem of all. Council is telling us what we need, nobody's asked us. Host meaningful publications with all community groups. Example, you have a precedent here. Again, Jenny was involved with this. The recent Wildwood Park Neighborhood Survey, very helpful. Number four, use neighborhood groups as resources, for heaven's sake. We offer to share our research on neighborhood planning in other cities, planning that builds voters' trust. Now, if you do a keyword search of this document, you'll see trust in here three times. That's broken. Conclusion. SORG, the South Osborne Residents Group, objects in principle to rezoning this land because the city has not consulted residents in depth or with respect on long-term neighborhood planning. Have you any questions?
You done? Anybody? No? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right, Brian Cornelison.
He was on the other side.
Oh, sorry, I got my mixed up. I'm going to get back over there. Support. Marsh, Brian, Hill, Pike has spoke, Eddie spoke, Al McDonald, declined to speak, thank you very much. In opposition, Dave Fjorch, and we're good? Dave speak and Grisha, is that it, thanks? Welcome, Dave.
Thank you.
Have a seat. Just tell us your address.
Yeah, Dave Hirsch.
Yeah, go ahead, Hirsch.
And my property is on Berwick Place, so I would be sort of the hockey puck, I guess, in this situation. It's a little bit frightening. First of all, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak, and I wanted to raise a number of points in opposition, or at least concern, to the development as it's been proposed right now. My understanding, transit development generally has a ratio of 0.75 to 1.5 parking spots if it's designed to promote use of transit. So if we're looking at a 1.5 ratio for this, we're at the highest end of what would be recommended for parking spots in a transit-oriented development. So I'd ask the council to consider if that's where we want to go, if we want this to be a model for rapid transit development going forward. I think that relates into what a lot of people are talking about, though, which is the transportation and the traffic flow that will occur. In particular, Berwick Place, and I don't have this up here, but Berwick Place abuts right up against the back lane, which is being used as the main access point for all the parking units. And there's two style of parking units that are being proposed. One is a perpendicular parking style. The second is access to a main parking lot. And I think both of those cause some concerns. And then if we go to the maximum number of parking spots, I think that just aggravates that situation.
Could I just ask you one question? See, your address is Waterloo.
Right.
Do you live there?
I have multiple properties.
You own property there? Okay.
Yeah, thank you. So with regard to traffic flow that would be occurring on what's now being considered a continuation of Argyle Street, I think The first concern I would have would be for... Yeah, thank you. For the access, I know that the transit street accessing in is only being considered possibly for large trucks and deliveries of that nature so that they're not parking in the back lane. But I'm wondering if that larger parking lot could also be accessed from the front rather than the back. That would eliminate approximately one-third of the traffic down the back lane. I think would go quite far to alleviating the concerns of some of the concerns of the residents. Secondly, I think that it would be important if it's going to be perpendicular where everyone's backing out that there would be consideration given to some sort of a meridian between the parking and the back lane itself. First of all, people backing out with all the traffic going up and down I think is quite dangerous. And also if the map was up again, you'd notice that the properties on the other side on Berwick Place are also very narrow. So the ratio of driveway to yard is quite small. At this particular point, the snow is being plowed to the open field side, but if we have that continual run of perpendicular parking, there would be no opportunity to plow anything to the north side, to the development side, so that would require all snow plowing to be done to the current residential side. There's very little spots on that side as it exists right now to store any snow, and so I think that would create two sets of perpendicular people pulling in with very limited visibility. I'm not certain what concern, I'm not certain what consideration has been given to recycling and trash removal. I would imagine a development of that nature would have some rather large bins, and I'm not sure where they would be stored, but probably you need access from the road as well. So if those are being stored in the back lane, that again will cut down on the ability for people to see what's coming up and down the back lane. So if there was some sort of a meridian system where it was placed off and the people weren't directly coming out of their parking stalls at the development, I think that would be a much safer traffic flow situation. Secondary proposal I would also put forward with regard to that large parking spot that is to the west end of the development. Currently, it's oriented so that it exits directly down the long length of the RU back lane. I'm not certain why we'd want to have that oriented so that it's going down the length of the back lane. It would make sense that that would go down the shorter area. There's probably about five houses on the blade of the hockey stick, whereas there's probably about 25 houses on the other end. And simply orienting the traffic out of there would take that traffic down the shorter area. But again, my first choice would be that that comes directly out to the front and not the back. And then I'm wondering for service, delivery, mechanical, trash removal, all the large vehicles, where those vehicles would have access to any of those units with the large number of units that would be there at that site. Finally, I know that one of the attractions to Fort Rouge is the rapid transit, and a lot of the people who live in the Berwick area and around some of the other areas access directly through what would be considered the joining point of the blade and the hockey stick right now. In fact, I don't know how it came to be developed, but there's a gravel path there, and most people tend to walk that area. So the current residents, the people that have moved into the area perhaps because of rapid transit, would find that access point blocked with the current development. So I see that there's a path that's being extended from the Mike Holmes development, which is great. I think we want to encourage as much use of rapid transit in that area. But I think we're forgetting about the current use patterns, and I know landscape architects would sit and watch how people walk and not try and build a path where they don't walk, but rather put it where it is. And we already have a pretty clear indication, but that would be paved over with a large parking lot, and then a number of units would be in place. So my hope would be that we'd give consideration to current traffic flow in terms of pedestrians and not just motor vehicles as well. So I have a number of concerns as a resident on Berwick Place and possibly the hockey puck, and you know the stick wins and the hockey puck loses sometimes. So I thank you for this opportunity.
No, thanks for your question. Your things you've raised, we'll have a chance to discuss them.
Okay. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I believe that's it for opposition. Anybody else in opposition who has name has not been called or should speak? Going once, going twice, seeing none. Don Harvey for information. So you come up and ask some questions?
Sure.
Thank you. I'm Don Harvey. I live at 600 Hetherington Avenue, and I've been there since 1981. I probably was one of the first ones in the neighborhood to purchase infill housing, so I'm ahead of my time. But I really don't have any specific questions, just comments. I'm still a little nervous about the traffic impact study. This has been touched on, but I'm hoping we can drill down a bit more and really get a handle on what's going on in the area and how much traffic there is. Over the years, I've noticed that the demographic has changed in our neighborhood. There's been a lot of increase in rental properties, which is nothing wrong with. I mean, that's perfectly fine. But what I find is that they're generally younger people, maybe university, young working kids. So you have a tendency to have one house, four cars. That's kind of what I find. And, you know, I can give you an example. I'm not going to turn them in because maybe they got too many people. But down the street from me, there's a woman that has she's running a little boarding house, and she has six nurses in the house. They all have cars. 50-foot lot, there's room for two cars, so there's four cars in the street. But one house, four cars, and it goes on and on. So I think there's a lot more traffic in our neighborhood than what we realize. And the other issue is naturally the ongoing issue, which has been around forever, is we're landlocked. We have the train tracks. We have Osborne, which the locals don't want to use. And we have Jubilee, which we don't really want to use either. So we'll hang out in our neighborhood. So I'm hoping that we can maybe try and get the city traffic people together to get a real handle on how much traffic there is. And maybe there's some ideas about traffic flow or traffic calming measures, because I know that when the developments happen, there's going to be more cars, and people are going to use our grid system. And we don't have bays or coves. It's not the suburbs. If you go to Safeway, you're going to go right down a residential street or wherever. You know, you're going to keep in your neighborhood and go down the street. So I think there's a lot of traffic now, and I'm wondering how much more there will be and what kind of impact that will have. So I'm hoping maybe we can drill down a bit on that. And that's really my comments.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Now, see anybody else wish request for information? Anybody else have a name I haven't called? Seeing none, we'll move on to the administration. Do I have the administration respond
exactly.
first?
Yeah.
Great. So,
and I have some questions.
The process we'll do right now is we'll have the administration respond to Councillor DeBassi's questions, and then the applicant will then come up and be able to speak to matters that have been said, not to bring in new matters. All right? That's where we're at. Go ahead, Councillor Drassi.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to get a little clarification on, that a lot of this stuff happened with the previous application in 2010 for the 900 units on the other part of the land, and then this is kind of... in terms of the traffic, maybe you could clarify how this fits into the traffic study that was done then in terms of these two up to 250 units, although it sounds like they're proposing about 200, if I'm accurate.
Well, there was originally, as you mentioned, a traffic study done for the original Fort Rouge Yards development, and at that time it envisioned about 250 dwelling units to be located in this station area.
And this exact land that we're dealing with today, study anticipated about 250. So it's not like this is 250 added on to what was talked about before.
No,
this was anticipated.
It was
in that
anticipated,
study?
And The consultant updated that traffic study recently, and at the same, and it had the same findings as the original traffic study. The other piece of this is this development isn't actually proposing 250 dwelling units. It's proposing a total of about 200 if you include the secondary dwelling units.
So if you add up the 900 units once they're built out, and that'll take a number of more years, I assume, and this, what is the total number of new residents that would be expected to come into the Lord Roberts neighborhood if you, with all of this complete build out of everything that's being proposed, which is the 900 plus about 200? How many, that's dwelling units, so about how many residents overall over the next number of years, because it's just starting on this?
For the total, so if you look at 900 plus, say, 200 for this development, that's 1,100 dwelling units. So it would be roughly 2,200 residents. And I say roughly because we use assumptions. CMHC data says that for multiple family buildings at five stories or less, in Winnipeg, it's usually 1.7 to 2 people per dwelling unit. So it'd work out to...
Okay. Now, another thing about the traffic study, I just wanted to get some clarification. It was my understanding when the study was done originally, and also I'm assuming it was done more recently too, what role does our public works people play? I mean, I think people are concerned when you have a private developer just going off and doing a study. What role does the city staff play in terms of reviewing those findings? And, you know, I think people want to know that there's some kind of public review of this, not just a private developer. Can you clarify that?
So the planner who's handling this application reviews the traffic study with the Public Works Department. And so the Public Works and traffic engineers review the study and provide comment back to the planner. And that was done in this case. So the Public Works traffic engineers reviewed it and had no issues with the traffic study or the traffic study update and concurred.
Okay. Now, what about issues like, a couple issues were raised, snow storage, for example. Is that something that was discussed? Can you clarify what the planners have recommending about that, or
the snow storage is an issue, and it was brought up earlier to us by a resident as well. We had noticed it, but it was also brought up that way. And so, what was done was that the applicant agreed through the ACG is agreeing to provide for snow storage a snow storage easement that'll be on the north side of the lane. And I believe it's included in one of the more recent drawings. So that's going to enable the city to store snow. So that is addressing an issue that was present earlier.
So it won't be piled onto the lane, or it'll go
there'll
to
be
that
a dedicated
site
place
that's a
for
dedicated
snow storage
area.
Now, yeah.
And what about garbage? I can also ask the applicant when they come up, but I don't know if planning has any comments on that. That was also raised.
I don't have any particular comments on that.
Okay,
what about garbage? You mean being close?
In
to
terms of like where the, how the bins would work and where they would,
I would
be
allow
and if
the
there's
applicant
adequate
to
space.
Respond to that.
So we'll ask the applicant. Okay. Now another issue that came up was the path accessing rapid transit in terms of people walking to get to there, as they currently have been. Can you speak to that?
Sure. The applicant agreed to widen the pathway to coordinate better with the pathway that is going to be installed in the south of these lines in the existing Fort Rouge area. So that way, it meets the original intention as the main station access pathway throughout the whole entire Fort Rouge development, leading to the station. So it's going to be wide enough to accommodate pedestrian traffic, 3.5 meters, hard surface area.
So that's okay. There was an issue raised by the developer about the sidewalk. So it's required that there's a sidewalk to be put in on Morley, well as some green space. Now they said something about that being transit land, but this is something the planners are suggesting should be required as part of this?
Well, transit-oriented development principles, and this is immediately adjacent to Fort Rouge Station, transit-oriented development principles stipulated that it is good to have some outdoor seating space. The applicant alluded earlier to a couple of units that are targeted for future commercial. And just immediately outside those units, just south of them, there is a small area that could be used for seating, customer seating space for those commercial units. And that's exactly the location that the public service would like to see that, because it's close to the station and it's close to the possible future commercial units.
I think she might also be talking about this boulevard area along the bus.
Okay, sorry, maybe I misunderstood your question.
Which is in the ACG reports regarding covering the cost of that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if Kim wants to talk to that point.
Yeah, maybe you. Yes, maybe you would want to speak to that.
We brought him here.
Yes, there are actually a couple of, if I could call them, clerical things with the ACG report that have taken place. I was just informed by the clerk that a wrong version was published, but I think, for all intents and purposes, the public and everybody else has seen the correct version. But for the record, would require a couple of amendments.
So basically, on the agenda that we published the agenda this afternoon with the revised report, but unfortunately, it excluded a few changes to the ACG that were made previously. So, what would need to be done? I've chatted with Kim about this. Is on the published agenda on DMIS, there's currently a number 4 on section C, agreement conditions to do with sidewalks. So that would need to be deleted and these two put in its place.
Okay, so that's would be an amendment when we...
It would be an amendment.
When the thing gets moving forward. Okay. Yeah.
So, but those are the two that the applicant was specifically speaking to and your
question. But what you're recommending, though, is that this sidewalk be built. They're asking for some of the costs to be covered by transit, I guess, is what they're bringing up at the hearing. I'm just asking what the comment from the staff is on that.
I don't know how
or am I mixing that up with something?
Well, and appropriately so, the comment from the applicant was that the land does belong to transit and will remain with transit, so the director of transit, you know, should be authorizing whatever works.
Yeah, that part of it makes sense, that the transit should authorize. The question, I guess, about the cost of...
Well, the cost, there again, I don't, you know, transit would have to make a determination if they're interested in cost sharing.
But, I mean, what's in the report is saying that this is the responsibility of the developer.
Yes.
And I guess I'm just trying to ask, maybe planning could speak to whether that recommendation...
I mean, I think we'd be overstepping our bounds to suggest that the director of transit is prepared to cover half the cost of that.
I guess I'm looking for a rationale about
it. Yeah. I mean, we'd have to stick to our report. I mean, the committee, of course, can make a different decision. And certainly it could be discussed, as Kim was saying. You know, we were discussing further before standing policy.
I guess what I'm looking for is some of the discussion around, you know, that the developer is obviously benefiting from all our investment as a city in public transit.
Sure.
I mean, they're getting a huge benefit from all the desirability of people to live there right next to transit. So to ask a little bit here and there, I mean, that was my understanding when I read the report. I guess I'm just trying to get some confirmation of that or feedback on that now that they're bringing up the issue of, well, maybe we shouldn't have to pay for it. I guess I'm asking for the flip side of that would be that they're benefiting significantly from all of our investment in transit there.
I would agree with that, absolutely.
Okay. I guess I'll make my own
I can't
statement.
Elaborate that, unfortunately, in terms of the specific costs. And
okay, that's fine. Yeah, yes.
We do have one additional ACG item, which was, when the agenda was published, quite frankly, as the author of the ACG, I wasn't aware of some discussion that had taken place between the planners and the applicants about the requirement to construct a pathway across the site, which they're both in concert with. So I do have wording to add that item.
So that needs to be added to that?
Yeah,
okay.
If you would like me to read it to you.
Sure.
For the record. In the ACG report, item C, agreement conditions, section 1, servicing, to add a new clause 9, pathway extension. The developer shall, at no expense to the city, construct from the north boundary of the existing Fort Rouge Yard lands to the Morley extension
a 3.5-meter-wide hard surface pathway within a 6-meter-wide corridor that is free of fences or any encumbrances.
Okay. So that's, that would also be, do you have all these amendments that we've discussed?
Do, yes,
but
yeah.
Those are fairly straightforward
if,
at that time. Okay. Now, another further question that came up is, you know, people kept mentioning, and I guess I'll maybe speak to the developer about it, but in terms of the flow of traffic from the site, I guess that would have something that in the ACG process, the Public Works would have reviewed that in terms of trucks and all that. Is there anything you can say to address the comments that were raised there, or any comments to add on that? Or
just, I guess, the summary statement related to the traffic study was that the, as Andrew already mentioned, the load contributed or being contributed by this particular development was within the confines of the original traffic study, and it was deemed that the impact on surrounding streets was, I guess, within the range of what we typically see on local and local streets and back lanes. It wasn't out of range with what you see in other neighborhoods.
And I guess that brings me to the other issue that a few people have mentioned is the use of the Berwick Lane. It's, I understand it's being widened. Are there any other issues with that, that in terms of the traffic load on that street?
Yeah, I mean, it's being widened certainly to address one of the issues which was raised, that, you know, there are more vehicles backing up now on both sides. The existing lane was actually kind of non-standard in terms of its size, so this kind of brings it up to a more standard lane size.
It's going to be required to be widened?
So hopefully it makes it safer. By the same token, I mean, I guess there's the potential that people could use that as a, in terms of that route that we talked about. I mean, I guess that could happen. I guess that happens in every neighborhood. People look for shortcuts. I'm not sure there's a simple solution to that. You probably don't want to make it less safe to try and discourage people from using it. But
So in terms of traffic counts, though, and all of that that's anticipated from this growth, you're saying that it's within like what's normal range in a residential area. It's not through the roof anywhere in terms of, like, I know at the first hearing I moved a motion saying that if a light is needed at Lilac Street, for example, that the developer will pay for that. That's still in place, but I didn't notice anybody saying that we're going to be needing that or anything else changing as a result of this development. Like, what is the impact of this new, the 200 units on that need for that light or other measures of anything?
And obviously that'll have to be assessed as things are developed. I mean, the hope of the public service is that there'll be a lot of people moving here that are really keen on taking transit for most of their needs, and that we won't even see the quite the same numbers that the traffic study anticipates. Should that not be the case, and should there be noticeable increases in use of those key intersections identified in the traffic study, then the city has the right to require that traffic light be put in to help alleviate some of that congestion.
Okay. Can you speak again? And one other issue on the traffic in terms of the vehicles that will be brought in by owned by the, I see there's some underground parking in the apartment. What is the parking ratio going to be overall for the new, I guess, 200, 180 or 200 units, whatever it is?
Yeah, I've got that. So it's a little different depending on whether you look at the apartment building. It's going to be a workout to about 1.44 stalls per unit. So they're providing 171 stalls for 119 units. So that's about the same as what is required under the zoning bylaw. In the townhouse area, it'll be 1.28 stalls per unit. And again, and that's close to what the zoning bylaw requires as a minimum. But we have to keep in mind here, this is a transit-oriented development project. And there's acknowledgement that sometimes up to 25% less parking is required for TODs outside the downtown. And so this takes that into account, but even so, the parking metrics are pretty close to what the bylaw.
So we're not expecting to see an issue in terms of a lot of on-street parking like from this.
I think the applicant has struck a balance here between trying to ensure that there isn't a lot of parking flowing onto residential streets by ensuring that there's enough parking on site.
That's our opinion.
Now, this is an issue that didn't come up from any of the people here, but I just wanted to ask in terms of the fire issue and the ability for the fire to trucks to access that. How does that fit into what's in front of us today?
Don, who's our expert on
you
that.
You have an expert
matter.
Here.
Basically, when we get a development, planning typically would forward us a plan like this for rezoning, and sometimes the rezoning will have the properties on it that they want to place on that property. So our basic review is for fire department access and water supply issues for firefighting. That's it, basically. And sometimes access can be quite difficult to achieve, depending on how the property is developed.
Right.
Or street frontage or whatever. So now, in this case, you have a strip of land that has frontage on Hugo, but the rest of it is unnamed. It's a transit corridor. It's an unnamed street. We had some comments, initially, that were provided. So, as long as they're addressed on Hugo, we could potentially work with that. As long as it's marked somewhere at the access road, which building, 100, 200, 300, and so on, which ones are which. So, to be fair to an emergency responder, we know which building to access as quick as possible. Exactly. So, I initially looked at it from the front street only, the transit unnamed street. If we can use it, we had to confirm that transit was okay with the use of that for emergency, and they did confirm that. The other two things, of course, we would need is hydrants on that unnamed street, which they will do, apparently. Okay. And you need the street to give you a position with the pump to be within 150 feet of each entrance, principal entrance. So these are all individual entrances to these buildings as proposed. They all are required to be within 150 feet of where the fire truck is. It's just reduced wear and tear. That's a code requirement. Whether they be on the front or the back, you just have to measure the distance as you go around. So the only one really that became a problem was the furthest west one on the blade of the stick, supposedly. The other four are fine, and we can provide emergency access to those front four. No problem. The fifth one, what was proposed was use of the lane for access for firefighting. We don't typically approve any lane use for firefighting for many reasons, and I don't know if I have to say them all, but unless the applicant can control it fully and make it his own fire lane. And in some cases, they can do that. In this case, with the residential on the other side, it's impossible. So that was our comment.
That was sir.
Bring it around to the front. Show how you can give us some kind of access to Building 500 from the front, where our hydrants are, where the street is, and we're okay with it. We're not okay with the private lane, period. So
I see that. So, given that, was there a suggestion from planning then of what to do about this issue, which is just really the one building at the end?
Right. So, what the public service is recommending is one of the recommendations for plan approval that's already in there, that the plan approval also be run by the fire and paramedic service. We're pretty confident that something can be worked out for access from the Morley extension through plan approval.
So it will be resolved. It won't not be resolved. Okay. Thank you. I think that's pretty much the questions I have for the administration. Thank you.
Okay. We'll have the applicant come back up.
Heavy guns are up. Thank you for the opportunity to just respond briefly to some of the comments. Certainly, this is a neighborhood that is facing a challenge that many of our neighborhoods in the city are experiencing, that we're experiencing growth, we're experiencing infill development, and that has its pros and that has its cons. an aspect certainly is how do we as a city grow in a more sustainable manner? And that's really spoken out by the city's development plan, Complete Communities, on which we refer to in regards to the area master plan amendment, that it really calls that we have to grow up as well as out as a city, and that densification in certain locations is appropriate and called for, indeed in certain cases such as this, mandated. We are trying to follow the city's policy in regards to Complete Communities and the Transit-Oriented Development Handbook, which is city policy. And certainly for those who may not have a lot of experience with transit-oriented development, I'd highly encourage them to look at the city policy document. It's actually recognized as a best practice by Center for Transit-Oriented Development as a North American best practice, and actually many cities such as Calgary and others actually contact the city about trying to emulate this. There is a lot of information in here, and I think the point I'm trying to communicate as we have no control over what's going on in terms of neighborhood planning, but we have spent a lot of time and effort in terms of properly planning this site. There's been a lot of questions about parking, why parking off the lane versus why can't we park off the front. And if you just bear with me for a second, one of the principal challenges here is both of these parcels are very odd shaped, and they have a lot of challenges, particularly with the townhouse parcel. Basically, the principles of transit-oriented development is that you're designing for the pedestrian. You want to have the buildings up to the street and the parking behind. So in essence, on the townhouse parcel and also the multifamily residential parcel here, is we can either bring those buildings up the street and have the parking behind, or we can have the parking up to the street and the buildings behind, which is very much against what the city's planning documents say to do. That we're really trying to encourage this to be more pedestrian friendly, and there's a wide plethora of peer-reviewed studies that say that is critical in order to encourage more people to take transit and support transit ridership. What we're proposing in terms of access for parking off the back, we are proposing to widen, or we've been asked by Public Works to widen the rear lane to the current City of Winnipeg rear lane standards. We are not widening this into a local street or a collector street. We're following the city standard, which is a 7.25 meter right-of-way and a 6 meter wide improved travel surface. So that is the intent, why we were asked to do that, and that's why we're doing it. In terms of the traffic study, there's a lot of comments or questions about independence and validity, and where is this being based off of? And if I could just bear with me for a second here. These were two of the boards, this and the next one, that were at the open house about the transportation study. And this diagram was there showing that this was the original bounds. This is the subject site here. This is the rest of the Fort Rouge Yards. This was the bounds of the transit study. Basically, the rail lines to the west, Jubilee Avenue to the south, Osborne Street to the east. And at that time, when it was done for the original developer, Fort Rouge Yards, was based on the most current information that the developer and the city had and the engineering firm at the time had about transit-oriented development, and that we do know it has generates less vehicular traffic because there's this phenomenon called self-selection. People want to move near rapid transit because they want to be able to take rapid transit. At that time, the best practices and limited information we had, 25% discount seemed to be fairly conservative, but also capture what those things are. We'd rather understate that reduction than overstate that reduction. As part of this project, we from day one identified that traffic is a very sensitive issue, and before the city even asked or approached Streetside or Dillon about this, we had identified we want to go do the study again and make sure it's valid, and that we are helping to we are making sure we are not making this issue worse. Basically, since that time, when this original transportation study was done, there's been a wide plethora of studies and documents that have come out in regards to both parking and trip generation and other things. What we had back in 2010, 2011 was essentially one or two reports like TCRP 128, which is a recognized best practice on the effects of TOD on housing and parking and travel. Since that time,
there's been a wide plethora of studies, most current which being two of them, which I'll have before you. There are dozens, but just these two I'll call to your attention. One was called Getting Trip Generation Right, which was co-done with the Environmental Protection Agency in the United States, where they looked at 256 transit-oriented development projects, measured what they believe the trip generation and parking requirements are going to be before development, then measured at occupancy and 5 years after occupancy. In addition, beyond that, there's also TCHRP 728, which looked even more sites. And these are just two or three of literally dozens of studies. Dillon Consulting is involved in rapid transit corridors and TOD work across Canada. And we look at these issues very, very closely, because often municipalities are coming to us to ask how to deal with this. So this study was not done in a vacuum. It was based on best practices and a lot of information that went in behind it. The approach that was taken is we met with the Public Works Department to say, here's what the original study said, we're aware of these issues, this is what we're proposing to do, revisit the traffic study, how would you like us to do this, what are your thoughts? And we took the guidance of the Public Works Department on what should be included. We provided them with initial draft of our findings so they could verify our methodology and key assumptions, and also the overall findings. They have to review and approve those traffic studies. What we did find is we used the same assumptions that were done in 2010, 2011. We only used a 25% discount, where these other studies actually suggest it's probably closer to 45 or 50. But we wanted to play it safe. We want to be conservative. We're also very cognizant that if we start using different numbers, then people say, well, you're just cooking the books to say what you need to do. Long story short is the new traffic study confirmed the findings of the old one, that it is not expected to generate more traffic than what was originally anticipated. Indeed, it'll actually be less because we're dealing with less units, and that all the collector streets will still be within the acceptable daily volumes of the city. Is there going to be more traffic? There's going to be more traffic on all city streets everywhere. We're a growing city. Is it going to exceed the design parameters of public works and the city requirements? No. Also, you know, how many person trips to be generated? This is what Fort Rouge is generating in terms of AM and PM trips. This is what we're anticipating for this development. Again, this is on the 25% deduction, and maybe even less than this. In addition, there was a lot of looking at the lane. And we're very cognizant if we're going to be proposing parking off of the lane, what are the neighborhood's concerns going to be? The existing townhouses on the south side that are already built, they generate about 163 daily trips a day. The proposed townhouses we're proposing to construct is going to generate about 290, so roughly double. The total is going to be 365. That's still approximately half of what the city public work standards are. At 650 trips per day, you have to look at a different design parameter. We're at 365, including the existing residents that are there. So it's something that we looked at in a lot of detail. The other aspect had to do with cut-through traffic. We're very aware of that. We've tried to design the projects as much as possible to avoid cut-through traffic, and we know by the basis of TOD that people will generally they're going to drive less. They're going to own lower rates of automobile ownership. Studies have shown, those same studies have shown, that automobile ownership rate is approximately 50% of a non-TOD. Trip generation rates are approximately 50%. Greenhouse gas emissions are approximately 50%. And in terms of sustainable development, transit-oriented development is actually highly sustainable because you have much lower use of greenhouse gas, much more walking, modal split, and so forth. Drainage and sewer, all the land drainage from this site is required by the city to drain into the land drainage sewer that was put in as part of the rapid transit corridor. As such, there is actually going to be less water going into the sewer system in this area from both the Fort Rouge and this development than currently goes in there now before that land drainage sewer is put in. So if you just take out the amount of rainwater that's going into that combined sewer, that's all going to land drainage sewer now. And even with sewer flows from both of these projects, it's going to be less volume that goes in there today. And that, again, was also a requirement of the city. And the city actually had the vision to upsize that land drainage sewer to make sure that happened, knowing the issues that are in place. The concept of a rapid transit ghetto, experience has shown from all cities where they introduce rapid transit, property values appreciate. These properties, whether they're existing or new built, are in extreme demand. And the notion that this is potentially reduced property values and we'll have all these units sitting there, it'll be unsold. The independent evidence from a wide variety of cities suggests that's not going to be the case. In terms of snow plowing, the city staff touched on that. In terms of snow storage, moving just down to the site plan, there is an area that we're required to do snow storage easement. I believe it's in this location here, at least discussed at this point, which would also allow for some spillover. And in terms of the garbage, so on and so forth, there's a myriad of locations both here and here. We originally had located this garbage enclosures closer up to here, but we're asked to move them for this pedestrian walkway, so it wouldn't impede in that. The parking, we are proposing not a minimum of 1.5 the zoning bylaw permits, but a parking maximum of 1.5 parking spaces per unit. So we're not providing over that. We're actually providing under. We had actually proposed to provide a minimum of 7.75. Some jurisdictions, some cities actually required none. We felt we could have gone with lower parking numbers, but we were very sensitive about the parking issues in the neighborhood, and we did not want to exacerbate that. We're looking at approximately, I think it's 1.47 parking spaces per unit for the apartments, and about 1.1, 1.2 for the townhouse, and that's pretty consistent with what the studies from other jurisdictions say. Finally, the parking off the back. We've tried to design this as sensibly as we can and make sure that this is going to work most appropriately. Finally, just in terms of pedestrian access, if you just bear with me for a second, there was a point on the area master plan presentation that I think answers this very well, is yes, there is an existing gravel path that was put there by transit to address local needs in absence of a larger street pattern, but what... Okay, where is that diagram? Just bear with me here for 1 second. There's actually a diagram that shows all the pedestrian map pathways. Here we are. As part of the, my apologies if the background's a bit washed out, this is Hugo Street. This is Berwick Place. This is the lane that goes between Berwick Place and the subject site. This is Arnold Morley, the Morley Avenue extension that goes in. This is the station, and these are the two parcels in question. There is an existing AT pathway shown in purple. We're actually going to be relocating this section just slightly north, so to avoid some problems. And this is the enhanced, this is the enhanced pedestrian pathway that we were referring to. There is a gravel pathway that goes here at this time. This pathway in blue will link up to one that goes through between two townhouse clusters and a common open space in the GEM property to the south. In addition, GEM is also providing a sidewalk which comes this way off of the lane. So the gravel pathway currently goes like this. There will be a new sidewalk that will come like this, and then this here, the most direct path. So that allows people coming down Berwick Place or others to actually walk through a pleasant environment as opposed to a rear lane. And also, that's a bit more safe for pedestrians' vehicular access. In terms of fire access, the issue is the farthest west site, and just having some conversations with fire before the meeting, we believe that this is something we can handle at site plan approval with some changes to either that pedestrian pathway or the AT pathway and designing in a manner that it allows for fire access. No one is arguing the life safety issues. And with that, unless either of my colleagues have anything to say, we certainly would thank the city for its time and the efforts of the public service to work with us to bring this project forward.
Thank you. One of the comments was made, talked about, made some pretty absolutist kind of statements about there was absolutely no planning, there was absolutely no this and that and the other thing. I mean, you were there, Dave, when the other application happened, and can you comment on, and you also were there when for many years I've been trying to get a larger South Osborne plan in terms of the broader, the business district and the whole area. And we don't have, the city hasn't found the resources to do all that planning, which I'm very supportive of. But in terms of the area master plan, I mean, do you consider this, how effective do you consider that as a planning tool, or do you consider that there's been some planning around this site? You know, could you...
I think there's been an incredible amount of planning for the site per se. Mm-hmm. The surrounding neighborhood and how it interfaces, I think, is where the principal shortcoming is. In my current role from Dillon, I can't really speak too much to the larger city process. I can't say as the former principal planner responsible for those planning processes with the city, I think they need to be done. The best practices from transit-oriented development show they need to be done. You need to involve that interface, because experience shows us that once these sites develop, we're going to see more pressure in that first block of housing, that people are going to want to rehab housing, convert them to duplexes, and so on and so forth. And we need to have a plan for all parties that has a clear roadmap. In terms of these two sites, the city's planning document, Complete Communities, is fairly clear in what should go on here. We're able to use that. Certainly, I think neighborhood planning needs to be done for all the neighborhoods along any of our rapid transit corridors, and that's to everyone's benefit.
Couldn't agree more.
Thank you.
I don't think I have anything further.
So I have one question regarding the back lane on Berwick Place, and correct me first for my information. You're going to have cars backing out straight onto the lane?
That is correct, same as what's currently with the townhouses on the south side and what is commonly found in a lot of mature neighborhoods.
On the back lane? I'm not sure what you mean by that. Is this back lane going to be used as a back lane or as a front street?
As a back lane.
Okay, so this isn't converting, for example, Centennial Place where we
definitely
have...
not.
Okay, that's what I thought. Good. That's a bad plan. Thank you. Okay. Is it for me? Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Grab my placemat.
So the issue, I just wanted to be clear in the recommendations, the plan approval clause regarding the fire issue is all in the wording already.
Sorry,
and is clearly laid out there that has to be approved by the fire paramedic service. Okay. Nice. Okay. Within the ACG report, the ones that he pointed out. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I would move that the revised report of the Winnipeg Public Service be taken as read.
All in favor, opposed, carried.
I move the receipt of public representation speak included.
All support, approved, carried.